very busy. Many important matters require king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
your fingers or your king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
I am
super girl.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am
the king.
I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Job for Your Podcast. My name's Bubba. With me, as always, is
Catfish.
Catfish, how are you doing on this great Sunday evening?
I'm doing fabulously. You see, I saw some friends we haven't seen in a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And I use the term friends loosely.
Do you mean Sir Friendzone? Who are you implying?
There's Sir Friendzone,
yes.
And there's also Sir Peelzone.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. Okay, today we're going to be reviewing everything up through Game of Thrones Season 5, Episode 3.
Everything. We're going to cover it all.
High Sparrow. Yeah,
we're going to cover it all.
All right. And so, Catfish, what is your rating out of 10 for this episode called High Sparrow?
Okay, just a reminder, My rating system goes from zero, having your private parts flayed.
this is a new system.
By a soon-to-be Bolton. No, that's what I always meant by it.
All right.
And number 10 is getting busy in the cave with a grit.
Wow, that is a high point for you. Okay, so episode 3 of season 5, High Sparrow. What's your ranking?
Well, I'm gonna give it a 7.
No.
Because
this is your lowest ranked of all the episodes this year.
I am, and I'm gonna say
it's
the very beginning, 9. The end was a little better, but I will say this: I liked what happened,
right?
But I wasn't that enthusiastic about how it happened.
Oh, interesting.
Guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Catfish, I hate to be a repeater, but I'm also going to give this 7 double B's out of 10.
Double B's?
Yeah, bathroom breaks, like the one Uncle Tyrion took at the end of the episode. All right, so, and I'm going to go exactly like you, Catfish. I would say halfway through this episode, or maybe even three quarters, 45 minutes through this episode, I was going to rate this very high. This was going to be my highest rank episode of the season. But somewhere along the line, I don't know where exactly it was. It might have been in that scene with the High Sparrow or the second time we went to Winterfell. It kind of lost energy for me.
And see, so for me, it lost energy early
And
then got some more at the end.
Right. What's interesting is I think I enjoyed every scene. But yeah, there was kind of like the thrill I was getting at the beginning of the episode kind of dissipate it. And so we'll
If I was going to tell everybody that someone, tell them what happened in this episode, I think they would be like, wow, holy cow.
Yeah.
But the way a lot of it played out was not as delicious.
No.
Let me just say, this started out gangbusters.
Yeah. The book was called A Clash of Kings. This was a cat fight of queens or a clash of queens.
There's nothing Catfish loves more than a cat fight.
Oh, yeah. This, I mean, it was really, really good. But before we really dive into this episode, we got to give away our third and final. Our third and final poster. We had 3 exclusive Game of Thrones posters that we are giving away.
From last season.
From last season, that's true. But I mailed one off to one of our fine listeners.
Oh, did you?
Caitlin in New York should be receiving it by Friday of this week. One of our Canadian listeners who won the first poster we were giving away, you still haven't written in. You emailed me your mailing address. So, you know who you are, Canadian listener. Please write us and tell us your mailing address. Write me, Bubba. My Twitter handle is at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim. Or write, you can email me at fitten@prodigy.net.
You know who else
fitten
has?
fitten@prodigy.net. Yeah.
You know who else has prodigy.net?
Yeah.
The Maester.
The Maester, right. All old Maesters.
Maester's like, I still get your email there. I don't want to change.
I have a landline so I can do dial-up faster than Ravens, but that's about it.
Actually, in this episode, Ravens were a bit faster.
Ravens were quick all over the place.
Some of the time on this show gets a little messed up. But now let's get to the possible people who could win this great third poster. You could win it in 2 ways. That's 5 less than the sacred 7 ways. You could either write us a written, this is important, written review on iTunes, or you could tweet out something with hashtag the Joffrey of Podcasts or just hashtag Joffrey of Podcasts. And we have only 1 iTunes review this week, but a lot of you great listeners have been tweeting out hashtags, and we love
got
that.
we got some of my favorite tweets this week.
Yeah, we sure did.
Favorite tweets. However, I will say this: the review, perhaps not one of my favorite reviews.
Well, it's okay. Hey, no matter, we didn't say you had to write a positive review, and let's be honest, this is a negative iTunes review.
It is.
It's a 1-star review titled "Meh." From Leper Lily.
At least I will say this one thing. The one person, the really bad reviews are the reviews when someone comments on how they wish they could give a lower review. They wish they could give 0 stars. So at least we don't have that.
All right. So Leper Lily wrote, "The opening intro to this podcast is hilarious." Oh, thanks. Unfortunately. Uh-oh. "It's all downhill from there. These guys mostly complain about not seeing enough skin and how Brienne's story would be better if she just grew out her hair."
I don't remember that.
That was a point by our special guest, Mork, last week.
Oh, Mork. It's all Mork's fault.
It says, not funny, witty, or interesting. Let me say, Leper Lily, if last week's episode was bad, we apologize. Actually, most episodes could be bad, should be bad. I mean, we are not what I call double P.
Double P?
Professional podcasters. We are doing this.
No.
We don't know what we're doing.
No.
And so
we're also not double E's.
Double E.
Excellent entertainers.
No. So if it sucked, I apologize. But hey, you're still entered in the contest.
Yeah. How about that? All right. It would be so great if Leper Lily won the poster.
And we hope it's better this week. Listeners, we take constructive criticism. So hey, write us. Let us know what you
even
feel.
Even from unstraighteners.
Right. Okay. So let's get to some of these possible winners on Twitter. So we had a tweet from Steve, who's at Mr. Jones and Me, who said, "I've tried about 6 or 7 Game of Thrones pods and have only hit on," meaning he only likes podcast Winterfell, our Double M, Matt Murdock's podcast.
We love them. They're the reason we're for the season. They're the reason we're here.
He says Bald Move, which is a professional group of broadcasters who have ads on their show, and us, the Joffrey podcast.
What?
So thank you very much, Steve at
Mr. Jones and me.
Yeah, thank you so much. We also got, so he's entry number 2 into the contest.
Got it.
We also have, let's see, we have a bunch more, so I want to burn through them quick. We also have somebody who's at Taylor Swift Pops. This is, and she's just pretty much retweeting Glenn Ewing's tweets. We'll still let her, where she said, where he's just saying, "Hey, there's a new Joffrey podcast out this week." And so she's number 3.
That's enough. All you need to do is have the hashtag Joffrey of Podcast.
Heck yeah. Glenn Ewing, a great fan of ours. Glenn Ewing is entry number 4, who just tweeted out about our new podcast. We have entry number 5 is Anne, who's at A.M., how do you read that? A.M. Hagen?
That's what I'm going to say. A.M. Hagen 25.
So Anne was kind enough. She wrote...
No, I think it says A.M.
Yes, her name is Anne. You can read right there.
All right,
okay,
Anne.
So she tweeted out, "Getting caught up on season 5 Game of Thrones podcast. Don't miss Joffrey a podcast." Thank you so much,
man.
Anne.
Thank you, Anne.
Also, Double L.
Double L.
Loyal listener Michael... And I'm
Killy.
Yeah, I hope that's how we pronounce it. He said, "It's Monday. That means one thing, Joffrey of Podcast." And our final entry number 7. His name is, why don't you read that name, Kevin?
His name is Tannis Gale.
Right.
And he said, the first tweet was, "Just figured I'd share part of my daily routine," and it's him looking admiringly at a poster of Joffrey. It looks like a poster. It's hung up on the wall.
Yeah.
And that is great.
That is great. And so that's entry number 7.
Okay, but the other picture he sent us, which is still part of entry number 7,
right, that's fine,
is him giving a finger to all the figurines of the Starks.
So we
appreciate that kind of humor.
He follows his grace, King Joffrey. Okay, so we had 7 people. So now we've got, because we're nerds, we've got a 7-sided die.
Well, we're going to use the 8-sided die.
Eight comes up.
There's no way you can roll a 7-sided die again. Yes. Okay, so do we have it in our head, all the numbers? We'll figure it out.
Let's do it.
Well, hold on. Let me. Number 7!
Oh, my goodness gracious. So that's our last entry.
Our last entry is Tannis Gale. Tannis, congratulations. You have won a poster from last season, Game of Thrones.
When you say it like that, it's just not quite as fun. But it is a poster. You're getting it. All you have to do is email me your address. Once again, it's Fitten, F-I-T-T-E-N, at prodigy.net, not .com, .net. And I will mail out this poster to you. Catfish just brings the die.
Just so you know, Tanner.
It's not Tanner.
We did actually run... Tans, We actually got an 8 there for a second, so that was pretty exciting. The one other thing that we'll talk about is what apparently is going to be our season-long contest.
All right.
Now, Tanis, you, if you were attempting to submit, right, which you wouldn't be because I've told people, please tweet at me, a picture of you with someone from the show. It can't be – it has to be them live. It can't be a frozen image on the screen. A picture from them in the show, and then you will be submitted to the contest.
Right.
To win a very nice
Blu-ray of Game of Thrones Season 4 package. Now, let me say...
We do have one entry so far.
Hold on. Let me say this. Uh-huh. This Blu-ray was mailed to me. And Catfish, for being kind of what I like to call a double B.
Double B?
Big Baby said, why wasn't it mailed to me? And I was like, well, I tweet about Game of Thrones. And you went, I don't care. I want to come up with... I want Twitter followers. So, Catfish, you came up with this contest, and
it's off to a
roaring success. It's really so many entries.
Well, it's only because we had a winner already, but you refused to acknowledge it.
No, you specifically said on that very first podcast, I'm going to edit this in, you said somebody who's been on the show. You didn't say a replica of a chair. A replica of a chair that's been on the show.
He made a very good point.
That had nothing to do with the rules. He made a good point that had nothing to do with the rules. All right, so very good. All right, so let's get to this episode 3. It was written by David Benioff and Dan Weiss, the creators of the show, and they've written all of these first 3 episodes. And also,
and again, let me say, I always love it. When we see the previously on, it's going to catch us up, and it lets us know we're going to see some people. Like I said, we're going to see our flaying boy, and we're going to see friend zone Jorah. So that's pretty exciting.
Yes,
you would think.
Yeah, you would think. All right, so it opens up on the House of Black and White, and they're going through the House of Black and White, and they're showing all the gods. And I just do this to be evil. Catfish, do you want to try to name any of these gods?
I will name the gods. Okay, so let's start off.
It starts with a female statue, and it looks like the statue's crying. It's wet. Any thoughts here?
Okay, that's Double M.
Double M?
Mother Mopey.
It might be the mother of the Faith of the Seven. It's possible. Okay. Then it has, you see a ram's head, and maybe that's the Lazarene. We saw them in season 1, which Mary Mazdor, the lamb people which worship lambs. It might be that. I'm not sure. We also see a human figure with a lion head.
Yeah, that's TT.
Double T.
Tony the Tiger.
Okay. All right. We are really scraping the bottom of the barrel here. So I'll have to look at the song, The World of Ice and Fire, to see which god that is. We see the flaming heart of the Lord of Light. And the Lord of Light, even though we didn't see Melisandre, haven't seen her since the premiere episode, Lord of Light played a big part kind of in this episode.
Show did.
And then I think this face that's made out of a tree, we're supposed to assume is the old gods, the gods that the people in the north worship. So anyway.
And then we see the little pool here in the middle.
And a guy's drinking a cup. Jock and Hagar helps a guy drink a cup out of this pool. And Arya is sweeping the floor. What did you, and there's this awesome, there are other people there. There are other people theoretically working there. What did you think of the House of Black and White? Last week's episode was titled it, but now we get into it. Are you glad to see it, Catfish?
Well, let's just say, from the outside, I thought it was going to be a little bit fancier. Since it looks really dingy inside, I don't know why they care that much about sweeping.
It's so dark. How can you see the dust?
I don't know even how that's you can see it. So our friend Jockin, who, by the way, I mean, I know he was dramatic the first time we saw him.
Yeah.
But now, ever since this season, he is like super dramatic.
Yeah. And he's...
Like, I think someone should walk up to him and say, yo, bro, take it down a notch.
Okay. The guy who drinks the water, the cup of water from the pool, he says, Valar Morghulis, which means all men must die. And Jack and Hagar, even though we shouldn't call him Jack and Hagar, he calls himself no one. He answers Valar Dor Harris.
Now, this is a nice setup because they do look like this is a big deal when he hands them the water. I hope she's not sweeping into the water because then that would be.
What if that's what's killing the people?
Right, exactly. Exactly. Maybe if you stop sweeping the dirt in there.
Floor polish. What do you think of this, Catfish? Did you even read this part of the book? I kind of get confused on what part of the books you read.
I did not read this part. So again, I'm excited to see this kind of stuff.
Okay.
I will say this though. It's like what's interesting is Arya before seemed kind of tough and whatever.
Right.
But now, during this section, they're making her, I guess, a little mopey because and proud because they kind of are showing like, okay, we're going to strip it all away. But I from a some previous behavior, I kind of don't expect her to be... She's a little Starky here.
Well, what I would say is all the previous seasons where we saw Arya Stark, we saw kind of, you know, her anger. She wants revenge. She lists these names because she wants revenge.
Right.
And it feels like this faceless man is saying, you know, you can't even have revenge. You've got to kind of almost be a monk, you know, kind of be devoid of feeling.
Well, right. That's the one thing I did think of watching this is thinking the reason she has come here, obviously, is to pull revenge. And she thinks she's going to do it because he's obviously a great master at killing and she's going to become a master at killing. And basically, I think what they're going to try to get her is to the point, basically to the kind of things that Jon Snow is saying, where it's like, look, that's not my family anymore.
Oh, wow.
You know, that I have a higher, different calling.
That's a great correlation, Catfish, that Jon Snow, even though he wants it, you can tell he wants to be a Stark. Davos, you know, when we get to his scenes, Davos is like, do it. But Jon Snow is saying, no, you can't do it. So anyway, we watch the dead man, and his body is pulled through a door. And Arya's like, what's... Even though she's been there, been sweeping for a week, she says, they're not letting her pass the door.
I guess it's clean in that room.
Right. No sweeping needing. So they cut back to...
If I was her, I'd just sweep everything under that door.
Yeah, who's going to know? So the next time we see Arya, she's playing with her faceless man coin, and this girl walks in. I think we had seen the girl previously, this little kind of blonde girl, and the girl is almost blind or something. She's using the stick. What did you think was going on here, Catfish?
Well, I feel what we're trying to get here is that she has kind of been stripped down of her personality.
Yeah, well, I don't know if she's blind. She was using that stick like she was blind, but then suddenly she accuses Arya, you know, who are you to bring a coin in here, a coin you didn't earn? And she's like, who are you? No one. And for somebody who acted like she was blind for a second, she can see because she starts whacking out of Arya.
Well, she can feel where she is. This is like Denzel Washington in the Book of Eli.
I have not seen that, so you're really going to have to explain this.
It's a movie where he kicks butt for 2 hours, and then at the end of the movie, we find out he's blind.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, so basically this is maybe a nod to Daredevil as well.
So the girl who keeps hitting Arya, she's like, who are you? Who are you? And Arya answers, no one.
She's not buying that.
No, and then Arya gets so angry, she's like, who am I? You're about to find out.
Right?
She goes for needle. I really love this part. So this was still part of the episode where I was really high on it, I guess is what I'd say. Because I didn't feel this part dragged. I really liked it.
No. This part was exciting and interesting. And, you know, except for Jochen, who really let's take it down just a notch.
Yeah, Jochen comes in and he's like, kids, you're not allowed to fight. Dad's here.
Right, and then what's interesting is, this also makes it interesting, they introduce this game that we have no idea what it is.
Yeah, the Game of Faces.
The Game of Faces. So it's like, I'm ready to do it. No, you're not. And it's just interesting when they talk about something that you don't know anything about.
Right. Now, Catfish, I was in a fraternity, and I was hazed. I'm not sure they hazed me with the Game of Faces. I really am glad they didn't do that. That would have really blown. Have you ever been in a group like this where they kind of haze new members with the Game of Faces?
I know, I've never done that. I've never played the Game of
Faces. Do you think it's a great party game? Like, you go to a party, like, what do you want to do, guys? And we could play Coup, Ticket to Ride, we could play Settlers of Catan. Hey, let's play the Game of Faces!
Game of Faces! Well, I mean, the only thing that you can assume is that the Game of Faces is one where you just change your face.
That would be good. Now, Jochen Ghar, let's get to it. He comes in and he's like, hey, this girl is not ready. And Arya, he says that to the girl who's been beating Arya.
Who, again, by the way, you know, you give me a hard time for not noticing things.
Right.
And it's really hurtful to me.
Sure.
But I had no idea that this girl was waving a stick and that she probably was blind. So in this case, I do deserve some castigation.
I don't think she is blind. She acted at first like she wouldn't look at Arya, but then she did look at her.
Well, but if you're... you know, these people are training to be essentially superheroes. Right. So it could make sense that even though she's blind,
okay,
like Daredevil, she's got extra senses.
All right. So we are hitting the Book of Eli, Daredevil, all sorts of references that maybe
I'm trying to keep
George R. R. Martin
modern.
Stole from. Okay,
so. right. Exactly.
Now, Jack Nagar, you know, he says to the girl beating her up, he says, this girl is not ready. And mm-hmm. Arya gets upset at that. She's like, I am no one. He goes, what are you doing with Arya Stark's clothes? Arya Stark. Stark stolen silver.
That is a total zing.
Right. He goes, how can you be no one and be surrounded by Arya Stark's things? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. this is a total oh snap. And it kind of leads to a scene that I actually feel the emotion of. It's kind of sad. She's stripping away her identity. She's
right, now
taking these clothes she's been wearing since the end of season one and season two and throwing them in the Bravosi Bay. And
I would have felt more emotion. I mean, they did focus on her face a lot. I would have felt more emotion
if she had
gotten rid of her sword, which she did not.
Well, she throws away her clothes. She throws away the coins that she had taken off the Hound. Remember the Hound? She took his coins. She throws away the coin. But I am actually glad that she didn't throw away her sword.
Okay.
She's trying to keep a part of her. But
if you keep a part of you, you'll never be able to change your face into that amazing face that Jochen had before he took it off
this
Mission Impossible
man.
Style.
Well, okay, I think this is a great point, though. But she's going there for her personal dreams. And so if she has to give away her personal dreams, what is the point of going there? So the fact that she decides not to get rid of her sword that Jon gave her in the second episode of the whole series.
Right.
The fact that she doesn't give away that proves that she's not going to give away herself. And do you think it's ever good for somebody to kind of get rid of everything? And they are material things,
now
let's be honest.
Now I'm going to show my total ignorance.
Okay.
Because I thought...
Yeah?
And I don't know where I picked this up. I thought that her fencing master... Or father gave her that sword after she found out she had the wrong kind.
Okay, I'm going to totally edit this out. No, it was Jon Snow. In the second episode, he had it made and he gave it to her.
Okay.
So from there, we go back into the House of Black and White, and the scene even starts possibly on that Weirwood face. It's
and there she
tough.
Is, doing the only thing she knows how. Again, she's just sweeping the dirt in a circle around the water.
She sees another man's body being pulled out, and it goes into that door that she hadn't been in before, but this time the door is left open.
What?
And she looks like, ooh, I should sneak in the door, when suddenly, we're going to keep calling him Jack Nagar, this no
right.
one comes up behind her.
Well, we know what they say.
What do they say?
Curiosity killed the Catelyn.
They sure do. So Jack Nagar, he lets her follow him down to where, hey, what are they doing with the body? And what do you think they're doing with the body here, Catfish? They're taking off his clothes, and they're washing the body, and that girl who was kind of mean to her kind of helps, you know, kind of...
Well, again, I'm going to say this, and right. I haven't read the books at all, so this kind of frees me up to make guesses that may be right or may be
sure.
wrong. I am guessing what happens when you take that water is you kind of go into like a coma / slumber. They're going to take all his clothes off, and so he's going to have nothing, and then he's going to revive as
Ooh.
Someone who can become a faceless
oh,
man.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's my guess.
That is your guess.
I mean, unless the only other option is, you know, you drink this water and either something good happens to you or something bad happens to you. But so far, from what we've seen, it's 0-2 as far as
right.
what happens to you.
All right. So maybe, you know, I gave this episode only a 7, even though I liked so much of it. Maybe this scene here where they're stripping the man and washing him and it isn't really explained. Maybe it's so slow and it doesn't explain anything. Maybe that's one of the reasons why here at the end of the episode it started to turn for me. So that's all we see of Arya this week.
Washy, washy.
Did you like the Arya scenes this week, Catfish? Eh. I thought they were good. I thought they explained everything and did pretty well.
I'm going to say I wasn't enthused with the Arya thing because from the episode, I actually thought that the Marjorie Cersei thing started the episode.
Oh, wow. when you're... And, okay.
Well, so, I was like, oh, that was great. I loved the beginning of the episode. Marjorie and Cersei.
Okay,
so it didn't really leave a strong mark on me.
All right, well, let's get to it. The next thing we see is a beautiful establishing shot of King's Landing. We see the Septa Baelor in the foreground and the Red Keep, the castle in the background. And litters are being brought through the streets. And
this is so delicious. This whole storyline is just delicious. It starts off
It starts off great because Cersei is in her litter.
In her palanquin.
And she hears everyone cheering for Marjorie, yeah. Queen Marjorie.
She looks
Marjorie.
Out and they're looking at Marjorie. They don't care about her. She's an afterthought.
And we cut straight from that to the wedding. Like, there have been a lot of weddings on this show.
Boom.
Many have not ended well. But
Marjorie herself, she could be the priest. She could do her own wedding by this point.
And what's so interesting is, unlike His Grace King Joffrey's wedding, where there were a lot of people in the crowd that we knew, when you look at this crowd, you see Cersei and Pycelle there, and then on her side of the aisle, you see her brother Loras and right. her father Mace, and sure enough, you see the High Septon, who's going to get into trouble later in the episode, but otherwise, you know, nobody's left in King's Landing.
There's not a lot of people left.
And we cut from that to a scene that I wonder if our listeners are going to be cool with, and that is Tommen and Margaery on their wedding
taking care of business. And like, he's like, you know, I always say this to my ladies, did I hurt you? And they're like, I don't know, did you do anything?
No, I always say this to my ladies, or actually they say it to me, that was quick. Right,
it all happened so fast.
Oh, poor Tommen.
Now what's great is you know, he's like, all right, I'm ready, and she's like, let's just chat a little bit.
We get accused of being sexist, but this is a sex scene. I don't know what we could possibly say about it, except to say that he just can't get enough. And she, you know, is there a chance that she's not being satisfied?
You know,
I wouldn't know what that looks like, so maybe you can tell me.
Well, I can tell you that if she's not being satisfied sexually, then this is the right relationship for her, because that's not really her main focus.
No, but in the...
She's got schemes.
Oh.
And I don't mean that in the British way, which is just a simple, just a plan.
Right.
I mean in the American way, scheme.
Right. She is just, you've got to give up for her. She is brilliant. In the premiere of season 5, Loras was like, you know, if Cersei doesn't marry me, you'll be stuck with your mother-in-law here around King's Landing. And Margaery had said, perhaps, and you had even questioned, well, I wonder what she's talking about. But this manipulation of Tommen is so brilliant. She's like, your mom loves you.
Oh,
she'll always be there for you. She'll always look at you as her little boy.
Right? She's always going to follow you all around.
Oh, my
Lord. She cares so much.
And, of course, he wants to talk about other things. He's like, do you like sailing?
I'm not sure he even wants to talk.
Well, that's true. He's like, well, let me get you on a boat, is how you're saying. he's trying to do anything. And Marjorie just manipulates Tommen perfectly.
With a smile. So good.
And the way she does it, because it's all sweet. It's never anything negative about Cersei.
No, absolutely. Cersei just loves you so much. She's going to take good care of you. She's always going to be around to tuck you in.
Yeah, and even the lines like, oh, it must be so painful for her to be here with all the pain she suffered of losing her oldest son and losing her father.
Right.
You know, really just master manipulation.
Right, I get the point. She's like, but I'm a man now.
I'm king.
But you'll always be her baby boy, she says.
No, I know.
Oh, it's so good.
Do you think, now, this is, I don't want to get us into the trouble again, but do you think would have enjoyed her wedding night with Joffrey more? Do you think Joffrey might have been able to provide Marjorie some more king
love?
Well,
definitely he would have been able to provide her some more intellectual stimulation.
That's true. So Marjorie totally manipulates her young king. And the next thing you see is Tommen and his mom taking a walk. And
sure enough, she is holding on to him like he could fall over the cliff.
This is a smothering mother. This is mother smothering right going on. And it just plays into what Margaery did. And Tommen is...
Joffrey would, by the way, never be manipulated.
No, he wasn't. And in the books, he's out manipulating others.
Mm-hmm.
But Tommen is trying to come up with a good way to say, you know, Mom, you would be better back at home. And my mom's been out to visit, and I've had to do this occasionally myself. You ever had to do this with your mom, Catfish? Say, ah, boy, you're staying how long?
I
love my mom.
Not so far.
Not
but
so
I imagine
far.
At some point.
No. When I broke my foot, my mother was here for quite a long time, and she was wonderful. But at a certain point, it's like...
Time, you guts to go.
I know. And Cersei totally sees what's happening. And this
she
just
doesn't
hurts
miss a
her.
Trick.
It hurts her so much.
And then, oh, so good. We cut to a scene
right.
where Marjorie, now why do you think she's doing this?
Marjorie?
Why do you think she's bragging about Tommen's
right. About
stamina.
Tommen wanted to break the record.
Yeah. What do you think she's doing here?
But this is her, you know, chatting up with her girlfriend.
She's like
saying,
the Samantha
right.
of Game of Thrones.
She is, and she's having fun. And then Cersei comes in, and Marjorie totally
again,
owns her.
Sweet,
owns
so sweet.
Owns her. It starts off by the very first thing she says is, oh, mother. Oh, and you know, Cersei doesn't want Marjorie calling
that
her mother.
That is nails on a chalkboard
oh my
to
God,
her.
God, this is so good. In fact, we've got the closed caption on just because I want to go through some of these zingers, these daggers right to the heart. It's so good.
The great thing she says is, the first thing she says is essentially she accuses her of being an alcoholic,
all right,
which is amazing.
Let's get to it. Can we bring you anything to eat or drink? I wish we had some wine for you, but it's a bit early in the day for us.
Bam!
Oh, snap! Oh my God, it's brutal.
That is a point to Marjorie. Let's just score this. Point... 2 points for Marjorie, one for the mother,
well,
and one for the
Cersei
alcohol.
Is being nice. She's like, if there's anything you need, just let me know. The next zinger coming up is, once again, from Marjorie saying, you raised a gallant young man. I'm forever grateful. You know, like, your work is done.
Cersei is just like, I did. She doesn't quite know. You know, Cersei's usually the person with the bon mots and the zingers,
right.
But here she's like... I bet Cersei walked away from this conversation and thought of like five different things she could have said and is cursing herself on the way.
Oh, I should have said this. I should have said this.
Yeah.
So the next big zinger is Marjorie says she's happy. Marjorie says she's happy, ecstatic, exhausted. He's half lion, half stag. At least he's officially, you know, the public thinks that.
Right.
And
then she's about to leave. And then Marjorie pulls another dated reference. She pulls a Columbo.
One more thing.
One more thing.
Am I supposed to call you Queen Mother or
Dowager Mother? Oh, and that is the biggest burn. That is 3-0, Marjorie.
Oh, and Cersei, did you at all feel sorry that Cersei got served?
No. Oh, and then she says, I did not feel bad at all for Cersei. She
Dowager
is
Queen, right?
Dowager Queen. Because she has been so icy to everybody this year. Oh, so, yes. Oh, and then she said, you're going to be a grandmother, too.
Oh,
so that is for... Oh, they'll ring the bells all day and night. And then, basically, when she pulls her close and she says, anything you need, I feel like Cersei, if there's no one else in the room, Cersei would just grab her and squeeze the life out of her.
Now, this
just
all goes
like
back.
An ass.
This all goes back to when Cersei was in the her litter. And she, you know, this goes back to the prophecy about how it was implied that a young queen would take Cersei's place.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And here, Marjorie is the young queen, and it is just incredible. It is painful for Cersei.
That was so delicious. Those scenes, I was like, this is great. This is rocking.
It was
we've got
great.
We've got a lot of this. And basically, the favorite parts of my favorite parts of the episode happened right there in the first third.
Right, and it also shows once again that there are different ways to play the Game of Thrones. You can play it, you know, a million different ways, and Marjorie is playing it really well. Let's be honest, she's queen. She's almost won, you would say.
Now, another way to play in King's Landing.
Yeah, another way to play is to
go to Littlefinger's establishment and do a little role playing. Now, again, you
Lord.
Can call us sexist. We're not the ones that wrote the scene where seven women are walking around an old dude showing off their butts.
All right, so we have the high septs. This was if the Pope went to a brothel. And he was like, I want three ladies dressed up as the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And I'm going to pick him because he's got seven women here in various states of undress.
And what's nice is, first of all, we saw our bro from last week, who's writing Littlefinger's establishment.
Olivar. Yeah, Olivar. He was in the season premiere. I don't think he was in last week. Yeah.
We saw Olivar with the beard on, and there's a funny bit here, too, where he's like, I will have, and he picks the two gods, and he's like, you know, that's double. Yes, don't ruin the play acting.
Right.
Get away from me.
And this is just, this high septon, the main point outside of to titillate HBO subscribers is to show what a hypocrite the high septon is. And soon,
Now, what's wrong with sexualizing the gods?
Probably a lot.
Okay, all right.
Probably a lot. And who busts in the door but Double L Cool Sparrow, Lancel Lannister, coming in. And he's like, you are perverting the faith. Or you're just a pervert, one or the other.
And also they decide just for fun, Olivar, you also get a slap and a kick.
Yeah, he ripped the beard off that Olivar
slapped
was wearing.
Slapped him. When he fell down, he kicked him in the stomach.
And what did you think of this punishment that these sparrows dole out? They drag the guy, you know what, I would say this is not equal nudity to give the high septon's tush a little walk through the King's Landing. But what do you think of this punishment? Does the punishment fit the crime? You're making somebody walk naked through the streets and hitting him.
Well, I was actually surprised when we saw him later on, because I thought more would happen to him. And so apparently this was the extent. They paraded him through the town.
Yeah, busted his lip.
Who knows how far they paraded him around.
They were hitting him with a whip, calling him sinner.
Well, they were hitting him with a whip so that he would have to show his privates.
Yeah, that's embarrassing. The next thing you see, that High Septon with some bruises or herpes walks in.
And then that was my favorite part. He addresses everybody.
Right.
He looks over at Qyburn.
He's like,
and Qyburn's like, just
he addresses everybody by their name. He's like, Queen, Regent, Lord Tyrell, Grand Maester, and you. Hey, you there, buddy.
And Qyburn's like, whatevs. No worries.
And the High Septon,
don't call me. You don't want to call me.
Right. The High Septon is upset. He's like, these sparrows. He just is complaining about what happened to him. Now, he admittedly, like everybody, trying to downplay what his role in this whole thing was. What, me? I
was a ministering to the sick.
Right. You got to go to where with the sinners are. Right. Right. With my big sparrow, he's doing dangerous stuff. Qyburn actually is the one who calls him out on it.
He's got a good zing.
Oh, you were helping the devout horse. And Cersei, we don't know in this scene whether Cersei buys this or not. But the High Septon, he's like, I want justice, darn it. And he wants this High Sparrow killed.
Well, the way Cersei's looking, and I got to give credit again to her. She looks like, when she's looking, she looks like, how can I turn this situation to my advantage?
So did you think that she would do this? Because we follow her, and she has her Kingsguard Meryn Trant there, one guy on Arya's list, and they go to this kind of dirty back alley.
It does not smell nice.
Right. She's got this in the colonial American times, they would call this tussy mussy, the thing you would smell so you didn't have to smell the terrible scent.
Right. They put a little Vicks vapor rub on there.
Right. And so it's like a soup kitchen here. And the High Septon it's not like a soup kitchen. It is a soup kitchen. I'm sorry. The High Sparrow is giving out food. Did you see that Cersei would kind of keep the High Septon in a prison and go to the High Sparrow and kind of say, hey, I agree with you?
No, I had no idea, but this has to be a way, you know, essentially the High Septon, he's already has his power consolidated.
Right.
So basically, it seems to me, and this is cheating a little bit from the next week's thing, you know, what we see in next week, but it seems to me what she's doing is she wants to put another person in power who sort of owes allegiance to her.
Yeah, on her team.
Just like she did with Qyburn.
Her team, right. She wants loyal people around her. I'm not sure this guy, this High Sparrow, is going to be on the small council. Heck, he might, you know. Why not put this guy on the small council? You know, maybe get him
It might be a little too radical. She may not Again, I haven't read. She may not openly embrace him, but she can definitely use him to sort of cause some trouble if she needs to cause trouble.
Now, Catfish, I want to talk real quick. We don't talk about all the great acting on this show. And I want to talk real briefly. This is Jonathan Pryce, an actor we've known
for
years, been in a million great things. He really doesn't get much to do here, but what do you think of the introduction of the High Sparrow?
I mean, he's very solid.
Yeah.
You know, he obviously has a lot going on himself as far as in his head. Yeah. Like, he makes you wonder. He seems like a very solid dude, but the very fact that he sort of doesn't lecture her
no.
Makes it seem like he also has some bigger plans, belies his
intelligence.
Well, it shows his intelligence, but it belies his whole, they call me High Sparrow, but we're all the same. That is not true. He is the charismatic leader of this group.
Oh, that's a good point. And he even has a great way with words. He calls the High Septons behavior, he's like a boil. And what do you have to do to a boil? You know, lance it, you know, yeah. A.K.A. lancel it.
I do say he basically, this was basically jaw-dropping to him when Cersei said, I agree, I put him in jail, the faith has to be strong. And he's like, whoa.
She even says this great line, we have to do everything to protect each other. So she is getting this guy on her side. Then we cut from that to really one of my stars of everything, Qyburn.
Right?
Qyburn, he's been around. He was introduced in the first episode of season 3 and really hasn't been doing much. But the more we see him, the more we enjoy him. Was that a rat? What was he killing there?
It was a rat. And he seemed to be surprised at what happened there. He's you know, as disturbing as this character is, he has been providing a lot of humor to the show.
Now, the kind of the narrative part of this scene is she comes to him and she's like, hey, I want you to write this letter to Littlefinger, get it to him wherever he is. Because Cersei's like, I want to know where he is.
Now, would that be the master of spies, which he's sort of taken over?
Master of Whispers is the master of spies. Whispers. So, yeah, it's his job to get it to him. That's a good point.
Wasn't there at some point the maester was sending out?
Well, normally, Catfish, you're getting right to it. Normally, the maester, a.k.a. the Grand Maester, Pycelle and his team would send out a raven.
So, finally, there's something I've gotten right here.
That is.
And that is that this is unusual.
Very unusual. So she's going to her spy master, so it must be top secret. So that's the narrative part
of
the
scene. Well, also, she's just cutting out the maester.
Oh, that's a good point. But that's the narrative part. But my favorite part is for 2 episodes in a row, we've seen this kind of table with a cloth over it. And today it moved. And you got to think that's the mountain. And
what's under the sheet? Right. What's under the sheet?
And so that's it for King's Landing. You would say King's Landing would be the highlight story of the week. What would you say, Catfish? Because all these scenes, maybe the High Septon at times, or the board dried me, was a little dry, but otherwise, I thought that was the highlight of this season. That
it was good, really, and yet, you know, it's funny, last week when I was watching it, I gave it a good review.
Right.
And then as we rewatched the scenes, I dropped my review. I might go the reverse this week.
Oh.
But just as I was watching it, and again, maybe my initial view was, I liked a lot of what happened. I just didn't like the way it happened. For example, the very next scene we're going to go to
is Winterfell.
We're going to deal with Sansa.
And Winterfell.
And I guess this was, even though, again, lots of things happened, it seemed to me that we could have covered all the things that happened much quicker.
Well, let's just go through the scenes kind of in order. Before we get to Sansa, we see riders coming up to Winterfell. They're holding the Bolton banner. And you know that Winterfell is under new management. We cut to...
Right, it is. And it's being cleaned by Reek.
Right. So it's under new
management. There's a guy who knows how to sweep.
Right. So there's a lot of work happening, and Reek, he goes to the place where maybe he put those 2 boys that he pretended were Bran and Rickon when he strung them up. But these aren't strung up boys.
You know, that's a very good point, because I didn't see the similarity there. But you're exactly right that that's right where he put the 2 boys up. And the fact, and his failure to do things right there is kind of what led him to where he is now.
Right.
And that was the beginning of the end.
Instead of two boys being raised, it's two flayed people, a man and a woman, and it's just gross. And poor Reek / Theon, he can't have gotten any lower. He's just disturbed. He's a shell of a man.
He really is. He's and then we see a crow. Let's have a little bit here.
A feast for crows.
It is a feast for crows. Now, what's interesting here is,
yeah,
is that even though our boy Roos,
yeah,
even though our boy Ramsay,
right,
Roos,
you're so confused. Okay, Ramsay is the bastard who became a legitimized son, and Roos is the father.
Ramsay, I have to say, even though he was a bastard, he was never really shy. I always had a good opinion of himself, and now it's gotten worse.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's not even really paying attention to his father. He's just like, hey, listen, let me tell you, I know how to deal with things because you know what's on our flag? That's what I'm leaving around the countryside.
Right. So apparently Ramsay was sent by his father to collect some taxes. If you're Lord of the North, you should collect taxes. And they didn't want to pay their taxes to somebody not named Stark.
Now, it seems to me that his philosophy was right.
You think Ramsay's philosophy was right. You flay the parents, and then the son, who's now lord of that castle or keep, is going to shut up and just pay the taxes, which he did.
Well, he sent him to pay the taxes, right? And what happened?
They didn't want to.
The taxes got paid.
Well,
I mean, sometimes you got to break some eggs to make an omelet.
You're saying he'd be a great IRS agent, is what you're saying.
I'm saying that even though his methods are brutal.
Brutal? That's an understatement.
He gets the job done.
Yeah, Lord Serwin is the name of the family.
Let me tell you something. These people up in the north, they are effing crazy for their Starks.
Yeah, Serwin, apparently, before he got flayed, he said, you want me to kiss
the traitor's boot? Remember last week, the 10-year-old girl who was in charge said,
right, of Bear Island, the Mormont family. She's like, and now Papa Roos here, Papa Bolton Roos, he's like, son, we don't have enough men. The Lannisters, yes, we got this because we allied with the Lannisters. The Lannisters, in their history, have never sent an army this far north. If we're in trouble, they're not going to come bail us out.
Right.
You got to start turning the people to our side. And in fact, he hints that, hey, the one way to kind of get people on your sides is, you know, the simplest way without flaying people is marriage. And that cuts to somebody, Sansa Stark. Now, did you see this coming, Catfish?
I did. As soon as you said marriage, I looked over at you and I said, aha, because when Littlefinger, Lord Baelish, said last week, my marriage proposal was accepted.
Right.
Remember, I said I didn't think it would be him. He doesn't need to get any more alliances. So I thought it was for her. And sure enough, it is for her.
But this is I got to be honest, this seems a bit crazy from Sansa's part. She lays it out.
Absolutely.
She lays it out. She looks at Moat Cailin, which is if you ever look at the map, it's kind of like on the King's Road if you're going from the south up to Winterfell or vice versa. She's right. Like, I was here with my father and Arya when we were going to the capital. And the way she says Arya, kind of, you know, emotion in her voice, I would assume she thinks Arya's dead. And I agree with her. This is terrible. The Boltons of Winterfell? Are you nuts? You want me to go to them? These jerks who killed my brother, helped kill my mother at the Red Wedding? I don't understand why Sansa said yes. Littlefinger pitched avenging them. You know, avenging them.
He did, but you've got to be, you have got to be very cold and emotional to say, I'm going to do the long con with this.
Right.
I am sorry. So I agree with you. I can only presume that, you know, it just had to be done this way. I don't know whether this was done better in the book, but obviously in the show, they can't spend like 10 minutes with him, you know, dickering around with her about it. So they have to like say, okay, well, I guess this is the best way. But I had to imagine they spent more time in the book.
Well, Catfish, I don't like talking about the book, especially in a non-spoiler section. But
all you have to say is whether or not this ever happened where Sansa was going to marry him.
Sansa was never engaged to Ramsay.
Okay. All right. So this is interesting. It's a shortcut that the TV show is making. And both of us noticed that even though it made a lot of sense, it didn't seem like anyone under the age of 40 would be able to be as cold
right.
and calculating to be able to make that trade-off.
Right. Sansa, I don't know how she thinks she's going to avenge him. Peter Baelish, Littlefinger, he doesn't say how he's going to avenge them.
Right, it's the long con. Right. You know, get married, have children.
To this bastard, yeah. Oh,
and 20 God. Years later, I don't know what's the plan.
Before we follow Sansa up to Winterfell on this thread of the story, why don't we talk briefly about this Brienne and Podrick scene where they don't want to go through Moat Cailin. Just like in the books, Moat Cailin, it's best to go through there because there's swamps and everything. It's kind of hard to get through to the north if you don't go this one path. But she's like, we'll find a way around. And then she has a brief scene with Podrick and Brienne. What did you think of this scene?
I mean, boy. I mean, you know, it's all... It's like you almost see the actress take a deep breath because they're like, here we go.
You mean a monologue? Yes. Like, I've got to spout out a lot of...
Here we go. Let me tell this long story about Renly Baratheon, which, I mean, okay.
Well, it sets
Not my favorite.
It sets up why Podrick Payne, and Payne is kind of, in the source material, one of the kind of noble houses of the Westerlands who are pledge allegiance to the Lannisters. So it does kind of set up how Podrick got to Tyrion. I'm not sure we needed to know that. It also...
Well, the one thing that it does do is that it was time. Like it's time for Daenerys to figure out how to rule.
Right.
It was time for these two to stop bickering and just say, we're on this path together and we're working together.
I completely agree. Now, this is me guessing. I don't want to say yes or no. But I really feel like this was to set up that Brienne loved, you know, in her own way, Renly. And that Renly was murdered by Stannis, and she still hates... Remind the audience, she still hates Stannis. Okay. And of course, where is she going? And where is Stannis going?
Winterfell.
Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. Okay. And so it could have a lot...
Oh, I didn't even think about that. That's a good call.
It could set up a lot of people kind of all being together and a lot of allegiances and a lot of this person
in the ninth episode.
Right. This could be foreshadowing here in the third to set up something that maybe goes down in the eighth or ninth episode or 10th episode.
And then the cool thing about when we see Pod here is, remember, he was unable to light a fire. He didn't even know how to light a fire.
Right. Didn't know how to cook a rabbit. Remember?
And now he's like, boom, he's the fire master.
Let me show you how this is done. And so that's it for Brienne and Podrick. And now let's follow Sansa Stark up to Winterfell. And the next thing we see is, sure enough, Littlefinger and his troops entering the Winterfell courtyard. And Sansa became a great actress real quick. She was, you know, she was smiling, she was sweet.
Well, there was a brief moment where she was like, am I going to do this? And then she did the curtsy and the smile. Again, hard to believe that she sees how this is going to work for us, work for her.
Yeah.
Now, we do see Reek, and we'll see him a little bit later. He's got to hide his eyes from her. She obviously knows him. I mean, he was brought up as almost like another brother.
Yeah, he was almost brought up as another brother to the Stark kids and to her.
Yeah, no, he was there. Now, so you can tell me, how young was he when he came to Winterfell?
Well, the show and the books get a bit different. In the books, he's about 25, and his father rebelled 9 years before. So he would have been taken hostage as 14. The show, I honestly think the show implies that he was taken younger.
Right. So basically, in the show thing, she's known him since probably she can remember.
Oh, that's true.
So, now, the one thing I said you're going to have to explain to me
sure.
is they do a really interesting cut here. And again, it's just a brief thing where at the end of the introduction of Sansa to her
disturbed betrothed,
we see a row of three women who do not look happy at all. Now, I want to keep my sexist bona fides, so let me say this.
Sure.
They are hot.
Okay.
But they're not happy. So what is the deal?
So Catfish, you do not recognize the girl in the immediate foreground on the far right of the screen.
No, although I wish I did.
Okay, so you have not, you got to pay attention to this show, but she has been on the show since season 3. Do you remember the painful scene where Theon lost his little Kraken?
Oh, was she one of the ones who pretended to, and then they ran away?
Yeah, she was one of the ones who helped Ramsay psychologically torture Theon, and then cut off. And then Ramsay came in and cut off Theon's junk. She's also the one who we saw the first time we saw them in season 4. She and Ramsay were hunting another girl that she was jealous of through the woods.
Now, so let me ask you this.
And then
though.
Finally, we saw her briefly in the scene where Yara Greyjoy went to rescue Ramsay, and went to rescue Theon, and she was up in bed with Ramsay having kinky sex. And the next time we saw Ramsay, he had all those cuts on him as he and the Greyjoys fought in the dog kennels. Do you remember that?
It was how do you know it was kinky sex?
Well, she was choking him, Catfish.
Oh, okay, all right.
He asked her.
Well, that's kinky for some.
Okay, let's edit another this Monday out. Afternoon. Edit this out.
Okay, all right. So that's who that is, and I forgot who she is.
And she does not seem happy to see Sansa Stark there, does she?
Well, the you have
that
to
could be foreshadowing stuff too.
Well, you have to assume the problem for her is when you get involved with a bastard. You never. They're lowly, right?
Well, she might be a bastard too. We don't know her.
Well, right. She.
Her name's Miranda.
She obviously is not highborn.
No.
This is what I'm saying. Right. And even though Roos,
the father,
Ramsay,
the son,
even though Ramsay, he has good parentage, he is not officially considered highborn. So when she gets involved with him, she has to assume that they have a shot together, they're going to be together, can be married or whatever.
Right.
The fact that, I mean, it's clearly a big deal, an unusual deal,
right,
that he got made, he got, the word I'm searching for while you're
legitimized, talking. Legitimized, Jesus Christ, catfish.
So he got legitimized. She couldn't have expected that. So now things have turned for her.
I want to give a quick shout out to continuity in that we see Roose Bolton's Frey wife. The fat Frey wife that he had to marry. I love that she's in the courtyard. She didn't get any lines, but I like that she's there.
Well, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
She seemed happier than anyone else in this entire episode.
She is the only happy one there.
She's happy.
So Sansa is shown to a room here in Winterfell. And this moment I also think is foreshadowing that this woman who's there setting up Lady Sansa in the room says an important line, "Welcome home, Lady Stark, the North remembers."
Mm-hmm.
And this tells me that there are people in this castle who still don't like the Boltons and want the Starks there.
Well, I mean, it is very clear to me that these people in the North have a lot of pride in being stubborn and sticking with their people.
Sure.
The very fact of the things that we have heard them say. The 10-year-old girl says, thumbs her nose at them. They have to flay somebody else to whatever. These people are hardy and they're like weeds.
They are.
You cut them and they grow back stronger.
You do. All right. So when we come back to Winterfell, we see Sansa walking through the courtyard, kind of seeing everything that's going on. And who notices her yet again but Reek? And she doesn't have any words with Reek. But
he turns away.
Yeah, he doesn't want her to see him almost. He's ashamed of himself.
I can't understand why that is.
And then we cut up and up on one of the kind of balconies at the wall of Winterfell.
Now, let me ask you a
Ramsay
question.
Ramsay and Littlefinger are talking, yes.
Is that, do you really believe that Ramsay, he says, "I'll never hurt her, you have my word"?
Oh, brother.
You believe any of that?
Do you believe that? And Littlefinger, he's kind of probing. He's like, I haven't heard much about you. That's a rare thing. And Ramsay almost is too honest. He admits
Absolutely.
He's been a bastard and not anymore. And it's a real moment. I don't think Roos would have preferred him to have said that. You know what I mean? Like,
probably not. I mean, although, why do you think Roos did it? Roos did it because he needed more he needed more strong, essentially soldiers,
right,
leaders in his army. So that's why he did it. He didn't do it because it was, you know, oh my God, I love you so much, you torturing bastard.
So one of the questions I had when I suspected this is, Sansa's still married to Tyrion. But according to Littlefinger, if they haven't done the deed,
right,
she's technically free to be married. And Roose Bolton, he's got a great point. You know, both of us are tied to the Lannisters. If the Lannisters hear any word of my son marrying Sansa Stark, a.k.a. a contributor to His Grace King Joffrey's death, they're going to be PO'd.
I want to go back to one other thing, though, because what I was surprised about to find out was, who is in charge of determining virginity? Seems a little surprising.
Littlefinger, really, yeah, gross, says, inspect her if you must, and Roose is like, the brothel keeper, yeah, will do that.
Apparently,
oh, that's terrible.
I didn't see that when I applied for the brothel keeper job. I didn't see that was part of my duties.
No. So the next thing you see is Roose and Littlefinger talking about stuff that, to me, I had big questions about. How can they do this? The Lannisters want Sansa, think she's involved in His Grace King Joffrey's death. And if the Lannisters hear that Roose is doing this, he loses all his allies. And Littlefinger is trying to dissuade this. And to be honest, because this isn't something that happens in the book, this to me feels like the showrunners trying to have it make logical sense. Like, oh, well, Margaery loves Sansa. It's okay. You know, yada, 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 yada. And then Littlefinger...
You think that's what it is?
Because it doesn't make any sense. It makes sense.
I think what they're saying is... he was said earlier, the Lannisters aren't going to come and help us. They don't care, so he's got to make other provisions. And he's experienced over and over again how much the people in the North rally around the Stark. So if he's got his own Stark, then he's got the people in the North.
Yeah,
they'll all rally around her.
This is still dangerous stuff.
This doesn't bother me.
It doesn't bother me
as much as her agreeing to it.
It's not me. Now, Littlefinger's trying to make the argument. He's like, Tywin's dead. Jaime has one hand. Cersei is now the queen mother. You know, it's nobody to be concerned about. But this still is crazy. And then Littlefinger gives his final sale job on this. And you think they would have talked this through before they agreed to the marriage. You know?
Absolutely.
But Littlefinger says, you know, the last time the Lords of the North and the Lords of the Vale got together, they overthrew the dynasty, a.k.a. the Targaryens and the Mad King. Now, he left out that they also had the Baratheons of the Stormlands
exactly,
and the Tullys of the Riverlands, but still, that's a pretty good sell.
Hey, why not?
Now, Roose and Littlefinger are kind of a great pair. They are both kind of schemers. Roose says, hey, this, and once again, this is the stupidity of the timing on this show. He's saying that Cersei sent that letter to the Vale. Then somebody rode from the Vale straight to Winterfell, where Littlefinger was, a.k.a. somebody, just some nobody at the Vale knew where Littlefinger was. Littlefinger's not being too secret about his plans. And then somehow he got there in the short... Like, this doesn't make any sense. This makes no sense unless
now you're,
theoretically they've been there weeks and weeks, and now, hey, this letter came.
When, you know, that's funny. You're right, because... He did say no one's gonna know where we're going. I trust all the guys with me.
Right, I paid them.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, that's what happens when you go to, you know, as Pod says, this is the big inn because everyone's right here. So when you show up there, it's kind of hard for you to keep it a secret where you're going.
But it's a good forwarding messaging, sir. You know, you want to have your messages forwarded. I like that. And I also, the one thing, even though I still feel this doesn't make too much logical sense, I like the fact that Roose read the note. Littlefinger's like, well, the seal's been broken. And Roose Bolton's like, yeah, it was broken.
I don't know why Littlefinger just didn't say, so what's it say?
Right. Hey, why did you tell me what's going on? And then Littlefinger's going to write her back, and Roose is like, yeah, I'm going to need to read that too.
Yeah, exactly.
Littlefinger is finally beginning to understand who he got involved with.
Well, he had to know. I mean, I don't see why Littlefinger's too upset. This is his plan. So it's not, I don't feel like he's planning on, maybe he is. If he's planning on turning on the Boltons, then obviously he doesn't want them to know his business. But if this is really his plan, then it doesn't bother him. But that just makes me think, what if this is not Littlefinger's plan.
Well, what do you think his plan could be?
Well, I don't know, but the fact that he squirreled Sansa away, he would be in trouble with the Lannisters. So it seems to me to make more sense that this is his real plan.
And maybe this is why, this is definitely where the episode started to turn on me. To be honest, I wasn't thinking of the logistical problems while watching it, but that second scene, or third scene, I guess, set at Winterfell, it didn't sit right with me. It didn't make logical sense. It was also just kind of slow and boring, as once again, it felt like the showrunners trying to explain how in the world this change made sense. So, what did you think of the Winterfell stuff overall? I thought it started pretty strong, but after a while, it was weak.
Again, it was the problem I identified, which was if I was explaining this episode to someone, it would sound far more interesting than what actually was, and those are the scenes that I'm talking about.
And hopefully this will be the last thing I talk about the books going until the spoiler section.
Never.
But the Winterfell section in the books is my favorite part of this fourth and fifth books. And the fact that it has been changed has me slightly worried that my favorite part of the books is going to be a part of the show that doesn't soar like it should. I don't know. We'll
All
see.
Right.
I promise to keep an open mind. So let's go to...
Doubtful.
I know. Pretty doubtful. One of our other locations in the episode, and that is the Wall. And we see Stannis and Davos walking into Jon's new Lord Commander office, and Ollie's there, and Ollie gets to listen in. Hey, kid, you get to listen in.
Yeah, you know what? The first thing I said to you was, why wouldn't you have Samwell as your steward? I guess because if he's going to be carrying things around, you don't want to deal with someone who's breathing heavy all the time.
No. Not at all. So Stannis comes in, and he, even though John just got a great promotion.
Well, John seems very comfortable, by the way, with his new position, because Stannis is like, I want to do this alone, and John says, no.
No, you're right. He said, no. No, Stannis Stannis, even though John got elected Lord Commander, Stannis still wants him to leave the Night's Watch. Yeah. Hey, you just got the head job here. Quit and get a better job, Lord of Winterfell.
Yeah, listen, the way the Wall is described, practically any job is better than being on the Wall. But John's got his pride, and they do mention his sense of honor, which, is, Stannis rightly points out, is not something that bodes well for you in this world.
Yeah, so Stannis, I want to get this line great, because Stannis had some zingers himself. So this is the beginning part of the episode. Another reason why I love it is that Stannis is talking about, he's like, your honor. And John says, I can imagine no higher praise. And he goes, I didn't mean it as a compliment, you idiot. Your honor got your father killed.
Yeah.
But John, even though he says this, John does says, boy, I really wish I could ride out with you and take care of these Boltons.
By the way, this is the closest Stannis comes to being a joking, amiable presence in the entire history of the show.
Oh, let me say that in the show and in the books, if you read some of Stannis' lines as a sourpuss, he's actually got some great, great lines. And he's talking about, listen to me.
Now, this is a key point here that's interesting.
It is a very
obviously
key point.
Key point where he said, you do with the wildlings what you will. And what's interesting to me is that the people who don't like John, part of the reason they don't like him is because his affinity for the wildlings. So I imagine, because drama involves conflict, that he will enlist the wildlings in his cause, and this will cause him problems among members of the Night's Watch.
Well, what's great is Stannis is like, hey, the people here, if it were me, I'd, kill all the wildlings. They're just trouble. Because most of the people don't like him. John admits most of the Night's Watch members don't like the wildlings, and he gives a little look at Ollie, who I've been claiming from the beginning could be trouble for Jon Snow this season. And Ollie, says nothing, which probably means he doesn't like the wildlings. And then I love this line, Stannis Zinger again. You've made many enemies at Castle Black's. Have you considered sending Alistair Thorne elsewhere? Give him command of East Watch by the Sea, one of the three towers that's up.
John is so good. He's like, he believes that keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
Right.
And Stannis is a zing. Whoever said they didn't have any enemies.
Right. Stannis is so brilliant. He's like, whoever said that didn't have many enemies.
However, I will say this, and this is foreshadowing what's going to happen next in this storyline. Stannis may be brilliant, but I think Jon was more brilliant
in
how he handled this.
Okay.
And again,
well, before we get to that, let's talk about this little discussion between Davos and Jon Snow.
I don't get any of this discussion between him. It seemed like a total waste. What do you think they're trying to accomplish here? They don't do a scene without trying to accomplish something. They're trying to accomplish something.
I think this scene between Davos and Jon Snow is Davos is saying to him, hey, you know, Stannis is kind of a bitter, you know, a gruff old man, but he actually likes you. He doesn't mind the fight you're giving him, and you keep giving him fights, Jon Snow. And he's like, but listen to
me. But we already got that idea. He said that we kind of got that before from Stannis in a previous episode.
Yes, but Stannis just said he's going to leave in a fortnight, which I think is 2 weeks.
Right, so it doesn't matter whether he cares or not.
No, it does matter. He's okay, like, listen to me. What is the oath of... Once again, he's going to Jon's oath, and he's like, the shields of men. And he's like, listen to me. Is it better to guard the shields of men? Is it better for the men of the realm to have the Boltons leading in Winterfell? He knows it's not. So Jon says, oh, I can't help you. I can't help you. I can't help you. I think this is setting up...
Okay, now hold on a second.
Yeah.
Because if this is setting up what I think you're leading to it setting up, I will be completely stunned because I have not read this book. But if you're telling me that what's going to happen is after the thousands of years of the history of the Night Watch of a non-interventionist policy, that somehow Jon is going to convince his guys, half of whom who don't like
him. I'm not saying that.
To go and get involved in this war. Well, that's what Davos seems to be.
Well, what I would say is there are other ways you can help, right?
But their job is to just sit there on the wall and protect themselves from the White Watchers. Their job is not to, again, they have a complete non-interventionist policy.
Yeah, they can't be involved. They can't be intervening in the policy. But I think if Stannis and Davos are strangers to the North, they haven't been there, right? They don't know anything about the North.
Right.
So...
He's going to tell them where the good bars are.
Right, yeah. Hey, where do we visit when visiting Winterfell? What's the best bowl of brown we can get, you know? I think they've got to say, is there any, you know, they keep saying, give us any help, any help. And he's right, you know, they can't have Stannis' army staying there, eating them out of their stores of food when winter's coming.
Technically... As far as I understand, they should be fighting against Stannis.
The Night's Watch?
The Night's Watch, why not? They have essentially invaded and have kind of taken over and are perverting the Night's Watch's cause. Don't you think? In a way, I mean, they're sort of aiding them by sitting in there and feeding them. That's already...
Oh, I see.
That they're already housing them, they're giving them aid and comfort when they should not be doing that at all.
Oh, I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough call. You're right. Most people don't recognize Uncle Stannis as a king, but
I mean, the idea is if you're
saying if anybody came to the wall and if anybody came, they couldn't get. They gave Tyrion food when he visited in the first season. What, you can't get food?
Okay, but he wasn't a member of a conquering army. He was just coming to visit. In other words, if Stannis and Davos came just friendly, or even if they came to say, "Please come and join us," and then they said no, that's completely fine. But what happens is someone has brought a standing army into the Night Watch's fort. And to me, in other words, like, if you're Switzerland, Switzerland doesn't give equal aid and comfort to everybody. They give aid and comfort to nobody.
I have been to Switzerland.
And did you get aid and comfort?
I got aid.
Okay,
I
did. All right.
I had some good stuff.
So you don't? Are you saying you don't agree with me? I feel like they shouldn't be helping them. If they were to
follow the Lannisters would not want them. They'd be like, why are you?
Right, exactly.
They're removed from it, so the Lannisters can't do anything to them.
Right, but it's not about... But the philosophy of the Night's Watch isn't, we'll do whatever not to irritate somebody, or we'll do it as long as we can get away with it. Their attitude is, assist and aid nobody. We are all men and we are no men.
We are no one. Hello, House right, of Black and White. Exactly. It all ties together. Okay, so this next bit, let's jump to the next bit, which I think you believe you said you really liked, and that is John actually, you know, we saw him in the Lord Commander's office, the Lord Commander's chair, but now let's get to him actually being a leader, being a ruler, being the man.
He's up in front. Now, this does seem, though, a little bit, you know what it reminded me of?
What?
It's like he's at a wedding, he's at the head table, but he has no bride. He's all by himself up there.
He is.
Everybody else is talking. He's sort of separate now,
right.
You know. But he doesn't seem to mind it, and he doesn't seem uncomfortable.
He didn't invite his buddy Sam, his campaign manager, to come eat with him.
Yeah, and he doesn't have a steward up there. He's got an empty chair next to him, because the chair next to him is supposed to be Master Aemon. Now, this to
me... Do you think Maester Aemon is in trouble if he's not coming to dinner?
This worries me, because...
Yeah.
Master Aemon is behind John. Obviously, he voted for him.
Right.
He believes in him.
Sure.
And I believe that he has a certain...
gravitas?
He has a certain cachet with a lot of the members of the Night's Watch. So even for the people who don't like John, because Master Aemon voted for him, that doesn't mean they're going to like him. But they respect the Maester. The Maester has a lot of power.
Okay.
So to not have the Maester be there and backing him could be a problem for John.
Well, is this you know, he's just one lunch. He's an old guy. Let him.
Well, that's what I mean. He's old. But you know what? Again, we only have an hour for this show. Every little thing means something. The fact that the Maester's not there to me means he's not long for this world.
Hey, now. So John gets everybody's attention. Everybody likes their dinner being interrupted by their boss giving out orders.
Thanks a lot, jerk.
So the first thing is he's like, some latrines have to be
built. A little jokey, right? And what's great about the way this scene is shot is, of course, we think that he's going to give it to Alistair Thorne as...
Or Jan O'Slynn. Hey, go dig some latrines.
Right?
But instead...
You double pee?
Double B.
The pantry peer?
The pantry protector, Jan O'Slynn, R.I.P. So he gives it to Brian. You know, Brian, you got the most normal name.
Because you're ginger. Right. I don't know. I don't know why that... Maybe he's paying him back for having red hair like his ex-girlfriend.
Now, do you... Help me out with this. When you win an election, do you immediately go to your election rival and give them a promotion? Instead of being like the trainer guy, he's now going to be first ranger. That's pretty sweet.
Well, here's the problem, and I do agree with John. You send somebody far away from you where you can't see what they're doing, they can consolidate some power and then attack you. You want to keep them close so you can see what they're doing.
I don't know. I noticed that Sam and Ed...
they're concerned about it, for sure.
Yeah, they give a look.
But they're not sharp like I am and Jon Snow is.
They give a look between themselves... When John gives Alistair Thorne this promotion,
smart,
they give a look between themselves.
Right, but also smart, because if you don't like him, and presumably the other people are backing Alistair Thorne, the fact that you don't degrade him doesn't anger those people. In other words, you know, they're behind him, and now he's first ranger, so they're like, okay, all right. We're not oppressed here. We have a voice.
Okay, so
However, he
goes to
the
Jan the pantry protector.
Pantry pisser.
He goes to the pantry pisser, and he's like, you're in charge of this ruin. You know, there used to be 19 castles along the wall. There are only three. And he gives him charge of a ruin, Greyguard, and he says, hey, you and 10 builders are going to go build this thing. Pack up your stuff and go out to this ruined castle. And Jan O'Slynn, the pantry pisser, he doesn't like this at all.
I don't know. You know, all the people here who are in the watch here, the Night's Watch. I mean, let's refresh ourselves who these people are.
Yeah,
Jon Snow is the highest of the high here. These people are murderers. They're rapers.
Sure.
They're whatever.
But to give you an idea, Sam would technically be higher in the normal world than John would. John was a bastard, a lord's bastard, but a bastard. Sam was an actual you know, he was an actual Lord's son.
So whatever Janis did to get here, obviously...
You don't remember.
It was slimy. Let's not talk about that.
Let's do it. Our listeners may forget.
Go ahead.
Janos in season one was head of the city guard, the Gold Cloaks. Ned thought the Gold Cloaks were with him. He went into the Iron Throne room to claim the throne from Joffrey. The Gold Cloaks turned against the Northern men. Littlefinger comes behind Ned and says, I did warn you not to trust me. Janos Slynt was warded Harrenhal in season two. He was told to kill all of King Robert's bastards, and he was killing babies. And because he was killing babies, Tyrion was like, I don't trust you. I'm going to make Bronn leader of the Gold Cloaks. And Janos got sent to the wall. And this is the end of the double P.
The pantry pisser.
Now, how
okay,
about this?
So now hold on. So this is what I like here is, so what I was getting
You're not
at,
allowed to like stuff you don't remember.
What I was getting at
yes.
is that I wouldn't challenge anybody in the Night's Watch. They're all, for the most part,
thugs.
They're thugs.
Okay.
Right, exactly. So even though, I guess he assumes because John was grew up fancy pants that
right.
he's not going to take care of business. But I guess he didn't hear the stories about Ned Stark
right.
swinging the sword himself.
Okay, so now...
Those stories didn't make it to Winterfell.
It was just 1 week ago when Daenerys had somebody begging for mercy, and she gave the nod to Dario, and Dario chopped off that slave's head.
I thought, by the way, was the wrong move.
You thought that was the wrong
move? Because those people were civilians, and they needed to feel like they had a part in this. This guy, by the way, openly challenged John in, again, a room of thugs and people who believe that in might and strength.
You don't think you could relieve him when the double P starts creating a third P right here on the headstone? He's begging for mercy. You wouldn't show him mercy?
I thought he was going to show mercy. They do a great part where it looks like he's going to show mercy.
Yeah.
And then apparently he has a flashback to Nom. And
to Stannis saying, hey, it was, you know, your father had honor. And the man who passes the sentence should swing the sword.
I like where Janos is like, yeah, right. Like you're going to scare me. And I turn to you and I'm like, he doesn't know how John was brought up.
And John, after he cuts off the head, he has a little eye contact with
Stannis gives him the nod of respect.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because Stannis said, you know, people have to fear you, right?
Well, yes, he did. But also, I think Stannis likes people who takes off heads.
Okay, so we've gone through all these stories. So many of these individual scenes I liked. I liked the scenes at the Night's Watch. But now let's get to a scene which I say this. It felt a bit rushed to me. It's our final location, our final place.
Uh-huh.
And that is a place which wasn't in the opening credits, but Volantis, a city in Essos with a long, long bridge. And we begin with Tyrion in his bigger box, his carriage box. And it's a beautiful, you know, sometimes the effects are good, sometimes the effects are bad. That's better effects, the establishing shot of Volantis. Tyrion is like, get me out of this box.
What is crazy is... even though Tyrion's drunk, I gotta feel he's gotta think it's a bad move. You don't want to go in the big cities. A smaller city would have been okay. A big city, problem. We knew this was trouble the whole way through.
But he was gonna have to go to this. This is where Varys is taking him to the big city. So I guess theoretically, Varys was like, "Let's go to the big city and stay in this box." But Tyrion has just been driven mad. He was in a box for weeks for a week maybe.
There he makes some good zingers. I'm tired of looking at your face. What's wrong with my face? I need to see somebody with hair.
Ouch, that's not nice. So this establishing shot, now it's some great digital effects work, but this is an actual bridge in Spain, this long bridge of Volantis, that they set up and kind of digitally put the stuff on top of it. The lower half, the white half of this bridge is a real bridge. And then the upper half is CGI. Pretty good CGI, don't you think?
I do. I really like this bridge. And so I guess I did not realize this was they're not ending up here. They're on the road to here, then they're to
right.
go on the road to Marine.
Yeah, they got here to go to Marine. And they're on this bridge, and as they're walking on the bridge, they're noting that Volantis has slaves. And we actually heard the story of these slaves back in season two, when Rob Stark was falling in love with his wife Talissa. Talissa said she was from Volantis and mentioned how these slaves have tattoos on their faces.
Wow. You see, I don't remember any of that.
No, you don't. You do not remember anything.
You remember too much. You can't give me a hard time for not remembering things. You know too much.
Okay, so they're walking on the bridge. Tyrion has got his little hood up. It's people selling snakes. What I like to call double S.
Double S snake sellers.
And we come upon this woman, and you know, I am not an expert in this, but is this our first woman of Asian descent?
Seems like it, yeah.
And she is a red priestess of the Lord of Light. And she's like our own Volantis version of Melisandre. She used to be a slave, and didn't Melisandre say that she used to be a slave? She did. And so...
Now,
she's telling this story.
I wonder, where are the cops here to break up this trouble?
Yeah, where are the cops?
You have to presume whoever is in charge is not happy, would not approve of gatherings like this.
No, but here, I got to point this out, it feels like more foreshadowing. Now, last week, the show finally mentioned Shireen and her, Shireen Baratheon, the little Stannis' daughter, and her grayscale.
Right, and last week you claimed that was foreshadowing, and I didn't believe you, and now I do believe you, and I think you're cheating, because I think you know something.
Okay, well, here we go, this red...
I think you know something, and you're cheating that way.
The red priestess is talking about, let's see, I want to get this phrase exactly right. The red priestess says that she was a slave, she was bought and sold, scourged and branded. Okay, da-da-da-da. Tyrion mentions that the red priest Thoros of Myr we met... back in season 3, because with his flaming sword, she's saying the Lord of Light hears everybody, including, and this is the big line here. She says he hears everybody, the stone men in their misery. And then we cut to Tyrion saying, "Stone men, good luck stopping the spread of grayscale with prayer." So if they mention it 2 episodes in a row, they're setting something up, right, Catfish?
You know what? You, again, I think you're cheating. You only know because you read the books, and that's not fair.
So you're saying you would have missed this, like everything. But she also...
Well, no, I think the second time... I thought it was over the top last week because in that scene you thought like 4 different things were being foreshadowed.
Yeah.
But they mentioned it twice. Yes, I agree. Grayscale is going to be a thing.
And then she... This woman in the street who all these people are listening to, she also mentions that... Dany is like the savior. Melisandre thinks that Stannis is the savior.
Well, it makes sense, right? They're all about fire.
Yeah, the fire reborn to save the world, the dragon queen. And then Tyrion's kind of almost scoffing at it. Hey, we're going to meet a savior.
How about that? Who doesn't want to see that? And then, whoa.
Yeah, what did you think of this? This red priestess totally... She's talking to a lot of people, but she just quits focusing on them, and she stares, and she sees Tyrion.
Well, I gotta think it's more than just... No. I don't think it's recognizing. I think Tyrion must be part of some sort of prophecy or something.
Lord
of
Light.
She's really eyeballing
him. Wow.
She's super eyeballing him. And not in the way he likes to be eyeballed.
No. And so he gets out of there, and he's like, okay, we gotta run. If this red priestess is staring me down, let's book it. And he's like, let's find a brothel. And this is a great thing for book lovers. This guy has a forked beard and braids in his beard. The doorman at the brothel. Giving a shout out to the look of Volantis.
And he says, it's good luck to rub a dwarf's head. And Tyrion comes back with a classic Tyrion line. It's better luck to Ms.
Right. Now, as he's walking into the brothel, we see a hand and a cup drop down. Did you know it was drawn?
Yes, and obviously that's
Sir
something. It was super heavy, super friendzone. And then I loved this.
You loved
this
it?
This was hilarious. That, of course, because Daenerys has heard about, there are prostitutes dressing like Daenerys. This is amazing. It's like going into a strip joint and someone's dressed as a sexy cop. Or... a sexy schoolgirl, because Daenerys is like the hottest thing, and so to pervert, I thought was very funny and something that could happen. And,
and Jorah,
and of course, Jorah is like, oh,
I can't escape her. Everywhere I look.
I would think though, if Jorah, I would have spent my remaining money on the Daenerys.
He's crazy about her, and he looks kind of rough. He looks like a drunk. He looks miserable, doesn't he?
He sure does. You know, basically. He tried to go one way, and then he realized he loved Daenerys, and so he super went the other way, and then he got found out. And
right.
of course, he got to see the younger, studlier dudes hitting it with Daenerys.
Right.
So basically, life sucks for him.
It does. It's bad for poor Jorah. Tyrion, Uncle Tyrion, his life ain't too great either. He goes up to one of the ladies here at the brothel. And she doesn't...
He makes some good moves. They got some good...
She didn't want to deal with him, did she? She said, you look poor.
Yeah, but you know what? He's got the sharp tongue, like the ladies say.
Right.
And he kind of gets her to laugh. He says, I dig you because I can't remember the word he exactly uses, but you got a good sense of humor.
Right.
You're sharp. You're sarcastic or whatever. Something I would expect... them to be. They're not all going to be innocent and sweet.
Hold on. Here, he's about to say it right here. We'll edit all that out, this stuttering and blubbering. Why? Tyrion says, you have a skeptical mind.
Which, to me, I wouldn't be surprised that prostitutes in a brothel would be skeptical. But apparently Tyrion finds it interesting. This is what I like. She stands up, he looks at her hand, and he flashes on Shay.
Why do you think he flashed on Shay when he saw this prostitute?
Well, because she had a normal human-sized hand in his hand.
Now, I think the dress, to be honest, the dress is kind of sort of like what Shay would wear.
All right, but she doesn't sound like Shay. She doesn't really look like Shay.
No.
But this would be the first woman he would be with since Shay.
That's true. And he doesn't measure up. He can't get it up.
He never measures up.
And it made logical sense to you that he wouldn't get busy with this whore?
Well, you know, considering he loves Shay and ended up killing her, I can imagine he's going to have to stuff a little stuff to work out. So he leaves, and then Varys is like, oh, where did he go?
Yeah, Varys is wondering where he went.
Yeah, way to go, Varys. You're supposed to be keeping your eye on this dude. And, like, what else does Varys have to look at here?
Right.
He's presumably not interested in anyone here.
No. So Tyrion has pissed off the top of the wall. Now he's pissed off the Bridge of Atlantis. He thinks the whore has come back, but it's
not. No, I thought it was Varys. He thought it'll be done in a second. I think he thinks it was Varys. Yeah, no need to worry. I was just he thinks it's Varys.
Hold on, let's see. Closed captioning said urinating. That was nice. Mug splash. All right, so. No need to worry. I was just... Oh, I thought you were someone else.
He thinks it was Varys. Yeah, no need to worry. Who else would worry?
Look at Jorah's face. Jorah is pissed off. And Jorah, he immediately throws rope around Tyrion.
He hogties him.
Tyrion is getting hogtied.
Now, before he put the thing in his mouth, I thought he was going to throw him over and try to hang him.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm taking you to the queen. So basically,
yeah.
Jorah's like, now which queen do you think he's taking him to?
Well, that is the great question. Tyrion has a price on his head. Jorah's been exiled from Daenerys.
Mm-hmm.
So,
he's also been exiled from King's Landing, but presumably,
right.
Presumably, he knows how important he is and Cersei will accept him back.
Yeah.
So basically, Jorah, of all the people we've seen on this show,
yep.
We've got Littlefinger, we've got Roos and Ramsay Bolton. Surprisingly, I think Jorah wins the award for biggest scumbag of this episode.
Why is that? Why does he care about Uncle Tyrion?
No, it's not that he cares about Uncle Tyrion. It's like, you know, he tried to present himself as an honorable dude.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, he's doing whatever he can to get back in anyone's graces. He doesn't care. Right. I mean, he basically... tried to betray Daenerys,
right.
And now he's just doing whatever he can to get back into King's Landing.
So, we went through the whole episode. Catfish, has your score changed? Has it gone up, gone down, stayed the same? What do you think?
I think I'm just going to stay with my original score, because that's how I felt after the episode. There were times I was like, I enjoyed what happened in the episode. I like some of the things that they're changing that are bothering you because you know, obviously you have an idea of what's happening. There was one thing that was different that I also picked up on.
Yeah.
I didn't believe that Sansa would so easily agree to that.
Right.
Again, there were things that happened that were delicious. The Margaery Cersei stuff was, to me, the best.
All right,
and also Jon Snow, TCB, taking care of business.
I'm tempted to go up but I'm going to stay at a 7. There's some scenes at the end just didn't feel, you know, kind of felt, it just didn't, that, like I said, it lost the energies that some of those earlier scenes had. But let us know what you think. You can write to me on Twitter. My name's Bubba, and you can write to me at Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim.
And you can reach me at CJGman67, and I'm the person you should tweet for your entry to the contest to win the DVD bundle.
All right. So we're going to end this episode like we end every episode with our Joffreys of the Week. Catfish, you love going first.
I do usually, but I'm going to let you go first this time.
Oh, how kind of you. You know what? For my Joffrey of the Week,
yes,
I'm going to go really outside the box
in
a way you would never think.
Good.
And that is, is my Joffrey of the Week I'm going to give to Jon Snow.
Jon Snow?
Can you believe it? He's done a lot of things. He ran to the wall to get away from Joffrey. Joffrey beheaded his father. He went north of the wall to run away. But when Jon Snow had Janos Slynt disobey an order, Jon Snow found his inner strength, his inner Joffrey, and said, "You know what, Janos Slynt, double P, you
pantry pisser,
you don't talk back to Joffrey, you don't talk back to me." And just like Joffrey beheaded traitors, Jon Snow beheaded traitors. So Jon Snow, probably the most miracle upon miracle, the most unlikely Joffrey of the Week, is my Joffrey of the Week.
Well, you know, that's interesting because my Joffrey of the Week also has learned by being in close association with Joffrey himself.
Oh!
Just how Jon picked up some strength from his association with Joffrey.
Yeah.
My Joffrey of the Week is Marjorie.
Marjorie?
Yes.
Joffrey's ex.
Joffrey's ex.
Why
and
is
basically
she
basically, because she, from Joffrey, learned how to outwit people with her mind and to use a sharp tongue to put them in their place.
Oh, Joffrey loved his sharp tongue.
Joffrey loved his sharp tongue almost as much as he loved his sharp arrows.
Right.
So, basically, you know, Marjorie was lost. She had a husband that she was trying to get into a weird three-way because there was no way she could get him. But basically, ever since she became associated with Joffrey, her life has gone great. She even looks better. She's sharper.
Yeah.
So basically, just picking up Joffrey's mantle, my Joffrey of the Week is Marjorie Baratheon, N.E.E. Tyrell.
Heck yeah. Folks, tweet at us. Tweet at us your Joffrey of the Week. You can tweet the hashtag Joffrey of Podcast, and we will be sure to find it out. So we've had a third of the episode of the season done, Catfish. Real quick, like where this season seems to be headed? Excited?
I do, except I just would like to see us be more there. I mean, it feels like the first two episodes were throat clearing, and we had a little bit more throat clearing here.
No, we did. Well, we hadn't seen the Boltons, hadn't seen Ser Jorah, had to get everybody up to speed on stuff. Hopefully it'll take off next week. You'll hear us next week on
The Joffrey of Podcasts.